All right, next we have providers' attitudes and perceived barriers to HPV vaccination among women 18 through 26 years of age. This will be presented by Denise Ligon.
Ligon?
Yes. Okay. Who is a PhD candidate in epidemiology at the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry. She is also a health project coordinator for the HPV Impact Project at the Center for Community Health. I present Denise.
Thank you. Hard act to follow, though. Just wanted to get a quick poll from the audience. Think about women 18 to 26. How many of you feel that these women should be vaccinated by, say, their family physician? OBGYN. UHS. Whoever can get them. Interesting. And as I go through this, you'll see that that was one of the kind of issues that came out. So to begin, I have no disclosures to propose or disclose. So we all know about the HPV vaccination. It came out in 2006, protects against 16, 11, 16, and 18. It's a three-dose vaccine, which also we found, as I will present, that might be problematic for some. Routine vaccination is 11 to 12 year olds can be started as young as 9. However, we do have catch-up vaccination schedules for 13 to 26 year olds as well. Previous studies on attitudes and beliefs have focused on children. They focused on parental attitudes. We do know through a post-licensure study that even among sexually active women between 16 and 26 years old, there is a 33% risk reduction of cervical precancer even after just one dose. So family physicians tend to think that the ideal age of vaccination is younger women between 9 and 13 and 13 and above. OBGYNs say that actually, and it's probably is more towards their population that they see, is that they are favorable in vaccinating the 17 to 22 year olds. The majority of providers in another study reported that the major barrier to vaccination would be the cost of the vaccine. So we decided to do something further, and we wanted to do qualitative interviews among family physicians, internal medicines, and OBGYNs, and to identify and compare their attitudes and perceived barriers to vaccination of women 18 to 26. We only had about 5 to 6 questions, but within each question, we probed further for more information. We identified providers using our local PBRN, which is a practice-based research network, in which we sent massive mailings to all practitioners who were family medicine, internal medicine, and OBGYN. The practitioner types that we interviewed were MDs, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and midwives. And again, by practice type. And we did have various practice locations, whether they had their own private clinic, they were a hospital-affiliated clinic, a UHS, or a neighborhood health center. So from our population, we had 34 who responded. The vast majority were medical doctors who we interviewed. We did have a few NPs and midwives and one physician assistant. We had actually really good distribution of the practice type. So we got 12 family medicine docs or practitioners, 12 OBGYN practitioners, and 10 internal medicine. The majority were in either private or hospital-affiliated clinic. We had good response from our university health services, and these were from 5 different universities in the Monroe County area in New York. And we also interviewed 5 practitioners from neighborhood health centers. The vast majority of our respondents were female. So the 5 questions we asked were, what do you think of the HPV vaccine? What are your perceptions of it? Do you offer the vaccine? How do your patients respond if you offer the vaccine? What are some of your perceived barriers? So the vast majority thought that financial barriers were the biggest problem, especially at the inception of the vaccine. When the vaccine first came out, not all insurances were covering it. For some, it covered up to 18 years old, so some practices said that they didn't even offer it to 18 years old because they fell under VFC, and so they referred them to a pediatrician or a family physician. For UHS, it was interesting because there are quite a few UHSs that don't do third-party billing, and so therefore didn't offer the vaccine because then the patient, the woman, would have to pay it up front. And as we all know, it's a very costly vaccine, and so that was a big issue. There were some UHSs that were actually trying to get creative, in which they were sending patients who wanted the vaccine to the pharmacy to buy it through the pharmacy, because then the pharmacy can bill the insurance for the vaccine, bring the vaccine back to the office, and have it administered. But then there were issues about the vaccine storage. Did it get there in a timely manner? Did it fall through? It was interesting. I think a couple of people said that. One of the other problems with UHS is that some of their students are out of state, and so if they have private insurance, they won't cover services in another state. For smaller providers, the cost of the vaccine itself to the provider was huge, especially at the beginning if the insurance companies weren't covering it, then the patient didn't want to pay for it. The vaccine went bad. So then the physicians had to incur the cost, and that was an issue. And there's always issues with the uninsured. As one physician said, I think that the insurance coverage is a huge part of it. And that it's not just what insurance covers it, but making sure the providers know which insurances cover it. Because if I have to stop and kind of look at, oh, well, her insurance covers it or not, that's a huge barrier. And for a while, our office didn't even order it because so few of the insurances covered it. And we didn't want to be sort of a liability that you give someone something and then they come back and say, you just gave me a vaccine that cost me $130 and I'm not happy. So that's an instance in where someone was incurring a cost because the insurance wasn't covering it. There's also an issue with insurances in different insurances will cover the vaccine at different ages. So some insurance will cover it to 21. Some will cover it to 22. Some to 23, maybe some to 26. And so physicians having to keep track of what patient has what insurance company is an issue. As I mentioned earlier, scheduling might be an issue because it is 3 doses. and also there's a timing of the doses. And so one of the things we found is that, especially among younger women who are in college, is they might have started the vaccine back at home. They might have gotten it from their pediatrician or from their family medicine. They go off to college, and then, you know, they go to UHS. Well, the UHS might not cover it. So then they are now behind because they have to wait to go home to get the next dose. Or they go to the OBGYN, where the OBGYN might have it. However, the physician has to now figure out when the last dose was and whether they're still covered by insurance, so it becomes messy. For example, one physician said is, I think we've had a little bit of difficulty with making sure patients get the full series, you know. We try to track them, but some of those in that age group, they're away at college. That was a family medicine provider. Also, remembering to visit, sometimes they'll only come in for acute visits, or in OBGYN, sometimes women will only go for their routine pap screening, which historically has been about once a year. With guidelines changing, that's going to be even less. And so when women do come, it's for their OBGYN appointment or for some acute medical condition, either at their family doctor, at UHS, or at internal medicine. So, for example, one woman said is, we're willing to give it, but we're not in a position to be, oh, wait, no, that's not it. Sorry. Where did it go? Oh, not too many women between the ages of 18 and 21 come to the doctor, necessarily because they're away in college. You know what I mean? So unless you get them, you know, when they're here for, like, an acute visit, which I have to be honest with you, I'm busy. So a lot of times I forget to ask. So when women go to their all these different appointments and not offered the vaccine, like in children, it's a missed opportunity, whether because they weren't asked about the vaccine, they don't know their vaccine history, it's still a missed opportunity. There's also no set protocols, especially in OBGYN offices. It's a new vaccine for them. OBGYNs have historically not had to follow any kind of vaccination timeline. Protocol, and so keeping track of it has been an issue for them. There's no EMRs can help, but if OBGYN offices use EMRs that have a good focus on vaccine follow-up, that's an issue. And we did get a few OBGYNs say that we forget when their last dose was. We did ask the question of how are your patients receptive, or how receptive are your patients to the vaccine when you talk about it or offered it. The vast majority said that their patients were either receptive to receiving it or getting it when offered. There were some patients who didn't want it. The reasons were what we all kind of realize or know, is they're some leery of vaccines in general. They don't like shots. Needles? Who likes needles? And some women actually said that they were in a long-term monogamous relationship, whether they were married or not, and therefore didn't need the vaccine. Some physicians, we asked, do you have any other comments about the vaccine in general? Some physicians actually said that they wished older women could get the vaccine. They thought 26 was just an arbitrary number, and that men should be able to get it. And this was done at the time when it was starting to be recommended for young boys. And also, if we realize 18 to 26, it's a good time for childbearing years. So there's problems with women being pregnant. So say they go to the OBGYN, they get the vaccine, they start the series, then they get pregnant. well, then now you have to wait till they're no longer pregnant, until they've delivered. But now you're doing postpartum depression inventories, you're doing, you know, making sure mom's okay post-delivery. Remembering vaccine becomes, goes to the back burner once more. We did ask the question if physicians took the woman's sexual history into account. The vast majority of physicians said no, we don't care. We don't ask about, or we ask about sexual history, but we don't take it into account. A few physicians or a few practitioners did say that they did take their sexual history into account. However, they proceeded to say, but they feel everyone should take get it anyways. So, and some felt that, especially women who have a history of abnormal Paps or are undergoing colposcopies, should be targeted to getting the HPV vaccination. Just because they have abnormal Paps doesn't mean they are necessarily infected with one of the strains covered by the vaccine. A few physicians or practitioners did state that there were still parental issues. Some parents still influence their children. Some UHS providers mentioned that. And interestingly, OBGYNs tended to say that they prefer to work with this age group because parents aren't as involved. So that was kind of interesting. There's some confusion about guidelines. Now, we did realize or learn, especially among young residents or like first or second year residents, for example, there's this quote that we got from one of the providers in, I thought you could use it up to 20 years. Or it was recommended up to 20 years. So maybe that's my knowledge, that's deficit. Or maybe things have changed. So I never even thought you could offer it to people over 20. And everyone also stated that it's too soon to see how it's going to affect screening rates. In summary, we do need some more uniform systems in places, especially keeping track of insurance companies, who's covered, who's not. Reminder recall systems are important, especially with some of these practices that aren't used to giving vaccines. We do need more training for our residents. I don't know how, but if we could have more communication between our specialties, that would be great, because we do, we're a fluid population, especially young girls among this age group who are in college. Not everyone stays home. Not everyone keeps the same providers. So keeping track of that would be great. Some of these issues can be addressed if we are successful at vaccinating young women, the 11 to 13-year-olds. But we know from other previous presentations and sessions we've been to that we're not doing that well there either. That's all I have. Thank you.